It's time to get the inside scoop on the Utah Jazz. From the play-by-play voice of the Jazz, David Locke.
Sweet revenge!
Presented by Murdoch Auto Group.
Ow!
On 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
JJ and Alex, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. We roll into the 5 o'clock hour. Jeremiah Jensen, Sam Farnsworth in for Alex Curie this week.
I'm auditioning for this full-time, by the way.
Good.
All right. Just make sure everyone knows this.
Take then. My job.
No.
This hour is brought to you by, this show is brought to you by G2G Bars with all natural ingredients, no preservatives, and plenty of protein. G2G Bars are perfect for anyone who needs a tasty and nutritious boost. This time every week always gives me a boost. It's always a pleasure to have the voice of the Jazz on. Let's get to it. David Locke on the cut.
It's time for the biggest story of the day. This is What Made the Cut with JJ and Alex on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
He's the creator of the Locked On Podcast Network, and he is the voice of the Utah Jazz. He is David Locke. Locke, how you doing with, what, 6 games now left in the regular season?
Well, that's the only thing that's wrong in my life, is we only have 6 games left in the season.
Right. So I mean, I want to start with that. I'm curious for you personally. Like, obviously, you know, this has been a challenging season because there's, you know, we all know what's going on here. But at the same time, I know how much you love doing this, and how much fun it is. What's it been like for you through this season, and you get to this point now where you have 6 games left?
I mean, I think it's easiest on me than anyone, right? For the players and the coaches, I think it's probably hard. For me, yeah. It's easy. I love calling games. I get to call a game every night. I definitely changed my call a little bit, but I think that's part of the art and the craft. And, like, yeah, if I get super emotional into, like, whether we win or lose, then I'm probably going to make it a miserable night for everybody else to listen to also. I'm probably going to say something I shouldn't, for all we know, right? Like,
yeah.
I get pretty into it. So, you know, if you listen every night, you'll hear subtle things. And I'm working on the craft in different ways to just get every night you get to work as a gift, and every night you get to work as an opportunity to get better. So, you know, if you really want it, like last night, you heard different verbs for movement in the broadcast. Like, I was working on vocabulary. But also I'm working, you know, I listen back a tremendous amount to my work, and I'm always working on something. So that was last night. And so you may be a little bit more focused on that. You might be calling it a little differently in the sense of, you know, it's not like need to win to get to the playoffs. And when Derek Favors' little shot in Memphis pops out and I want to scream a swear word, I go, everybody makes fun of me afterwards because it's like the worst call in the history of play-by-play, because my other choice was to say something that was going to cost me my career because I care, you know, because your emotions are at that yeah. level. So you're certainly, I'm not ignorant to the fact that it's different, but you're still preparing and you're still trying to figure out what's going to make the broadcast most interesting and how maybe can you tell a story differently. And, you know, we're in Sacramento and I came to the broadcast with the fact that, like, it took De'Aaron Fox 5,000 pick and rolls before he became a high level efficient point guard. So that's relevant to Keontae. Like, hopefully that's a data point that at least my pride would like to tell me that no other play-by-play announcer had, that we brought something different to the broadcast than anybody else had, and took it just as seriously as I would any other night. So I have actually, I get this question a lot, and so I've thought about it, and I respect the question, but honestly, it's like, no, like it's a gift to get on an airplane tomorrow to go to Los Angeles to call the game, and if you really want the deep philosophical answer, and I will stop talking at some point, I promise, I have a note on my desk, on the wall of my desk next to me, that says, and some people have probably heard me talk about this, it's kind of a life philosophy thing, it says, if at 18. And so if at 18, Jeremiah, I told you, you get to host KSL Sports Tonight at 5, 6, and 10, and you were 18 years old, how much energy would you, like, what would, you would sprint to broadcast us?
Yep, you're right.
Like, oh wait, you wouldn't ask, like, well, how many games have they won? What's their current status? Who's playing for them? Like, no. Like, if you told me, oh, I get to go to the Staples Center, I guess it's called something else now, on Friday night and call the Utah Jazz against the Los Angeles Clippers, and I was 18 years old, like, I lived in San Francisco at the time. I would have run to Los Angeles. I wouldn't have needed a car.
No doubt. I totally get it.
So that's like my little thing is if, and I would hope that every day anyone ever listens to me do any of this work, whether it's my podcast, these interviews, or me calling a game, that they feel that I have the same energy I would at 18 years old. And if I don't have that energy, then someone should come up and I suggest you don't do this because it'd be bad, but punch me in the face. Like if I've gotten so like, you know, like cocky or full of myself that I somehow think I'm bigger than the greatness of the job, and then somebody should pat me on the shoulder and give me a little come on it.
I agree with you 100%. You have to understand that the job is bigger than you. Like to your point, like I am fortunate enough to sit in a chair where Paul James and Jim Nance and Craig Bowlerjack and the list goes on and on of, you know, really great broadcasters have sit. I have to honor and respect that. I got to bring it every day because that's what people watching expect, and you have to be grateful for that. I 100% get what you're talking about. You're absolutely 100% right.
Yeah, I truly hope people hear that every night. Like, if they don't, like, let me know. Like, if someone – I'm serious. Like, if you're listening to me some night and you think I'm not bringing it, I want someone – Yeah, there's a bunch of them. I'm easy to find. Like, they're dropping
up. We'll hire the goon. We'll hire the goon to go down. Now, David, you talk about, you know, this time of the year, you're working on a few things like your vocabulary. What words, what adjectives, what verbs have you been using to explain and describe the way Bryce Sensabaugh has played these last couple games?
You know, I thought last night with Bryce, the phrase I kept using on the air, which wasn't particularly descriptive, but I thought he just went back into his bag. Like, you know, and that's a basketball term, but like Bryce came with a bag of scoring. Like, that's what he does. He's one of the best scorers in college basketball last year. He didn't play like 28 minutes a night, scored like 18 points a game. If you watched him, his usage rate was super high. It was his game. He went to work every night. And then he got to the NBA and he was smart enough to realize like, oh, wow, everyone's got a back of a basketball card now. And everyone here can score and everyone can do what they do. So, you know what, I probably need to make sure that, like, I involve teammates and pass the ball and do all these other things that I really have never had to do before, including play defense. And I thought last night was the first time that with where the team's roster is and who was playing, that he actually, the right thing for him to do was be like, yeah, okay, that's good that I worked on all these things, and his passing has gotten great accolades in the front office for what he did at the G League. But, it, like, last night, the right thing to do was go back in his back and just be a scorer. And like, we saw it early, right? Like, and actually that's what tipped off to me. It was like the second or third play of the game. He crossed over, crossed back, crossed over to the left, took sidestep and pulled for three, fairly contested. That's not a shot he would have dared take at any point in time, you know, 20 games ago or 40 games ago or 60 games ago. Like he was right to not take that. Right. Like, and so I think that that's what you saw was different about him. I just thought he was playing free and in his bag a little bit.
Taylor Hendricks, also impressive last night, and he's taking advantage of these minutes. 18 points for the second straight game. 4 of 6 from three. He's shooting the three ball really well. You got a front row seat to watching him develop and play. What stood out to you about his play recently?
Well, I think the last 10 games he's shooting like 42% from three, right?
That's good.
Right?
Yes. Now, yes.
Okay, so that's the positive, and I'm just not going to be totally positive here, though, actually. I've actually been a little bit more frustrated with Taylor recently than I think everybody else has been, because everyone else is looking at Taylor's shooting percentage, and that's great. Like, if he's shooting 36% from three right now, I'm not, like, let's not miss the headline. The headline is, if Taylor Hendricks is a 36 to 40% three-point shooter, the Jazz really have something. He's can stretch the floor, and then if he develops any other aspects of his game, you can start totaling up points pretty nicely on an offensive player at that point. And he's going to be a good defense player. I just don't feel like he's impacting the game though right now. But I'm being totally honest. Like, and you know, someone can tell me I'm wrong and that's unfair, but I feel like he's almost just gotten the habit of running up and down the floor. And he's just out there, and he has the athletic ability to impact the game. He has the athletic ability to crash the offensive glass and go grab two or three offensive rebounds a night. He didn't have three rebounds last night. I think he only had two. Maybe the night before he only had two. He had three last night. He has the athletic ability to impact the game by being anticipating and being in a passing lane with that length and taking a steal or two a night. he has the athletic ability to do to be running in transition and get out behind the other team. At sometimes, yes, I'm asking him to both rebound and run. It's hard. I'm asking a lot. But I don't feel like he's in. I feel like there's too many minutes right now with Taylor where he's just on the floor. And so, yes, I'm super excited about the fact he's shooting 40% from three, and his shot looks way better, and it has much more arch on it. It actually almost stems back to a day where I watched he and Danny Ainge working on the floor together. But if I'm just going to be totally honest right now, I would like to see him. I want impact. I want moments from him, and I haven't seen those as much as I thought I did earlier. I feel like he's almost kind of settled into a role, and I don't want him settling at all as a fan of the Utah Jazz.
Do you feel like
as a play-by-play announcer, I don't either because it's super fun. But I mean, I don't have the right to say it the way I just said it, so that was probably inappropriate. Like that, I want that, but like as a fan of the Jazz and a fan of the NBA and wanting him to develop, that's what I'm seeing right now, and I hope I'm not wrong and that the coaching staff disagrees with that.
Do you feel like maybe that's a reflection of just the overall poor play? You know, they're on a 10-game losing streak, second worst in franchise history. Is that kind of a reflection of that, that there's just not the same juice and energy on the court and in the locker room with these guys because of how poorly it's gone lately?
I actually don't think that's it, and I don't mean that disrespectfully. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
I think it is how do I say this? Can we talk about this in general and not about Taylor?
Yeah.
Because I don't mean this toward Taylor.
Right.
But I do think in general, in all things in life, then you go do something and you kind of figure out how you can settle into doing it. So, like, I know what I can do. I'll talk about myself. Like, I know what the bare minimum is for me to call an NBA game and still be fine. And there are nights where that's what happens. Either I'm super tired or I don't have the juice or whatever. But you have to fight that instinct to just go to be there, right? It's an effort to fight to like, okay, I'm going to do more. Like, I'm going to look and see what all Paul George's numbers are with James Harden and not with James Harden and what Kawhi's numbers are and how James Harden changed the team and how is James Harden different than he was in Houston or in Philadelphia and what's he doing? Like, you don't need those things. You don't have to do those things, but you got to kind of at least, this is going to sound too arrogant, so I don't know how to fix this conversation. It's not going where I want it to go right now. A little like I'm now living Animal House. I now have a voice on my shoulder talking to me. that was an old reference. Thank you both for laughing. So I guess my point is,
I love that movie. Yeah. I'm old enough to know what you were talking about.
Oh, yeah.
And now you have to go talk to someone about the fact you watched it. But that's okay. I think the point is it's natural for a rookie in the NBA or anyone to settle into their work.
Yeah.
And you need to go beyond settling into your work, and you need to figure out how you're going to impact your work every night. And I feel like Taylor has settled in a little bit, which is fine. He's super talented. But if he's going to be great, which is what we all want, he's going to have to figure out how he's going to impact it every night and how can he have the most impact. The other one is I would like to see out of all of our rookies, and like this just doesn't happen enough, and I understand it. Like, I would love to see somebody so exhausted that they have to come out again. You just don't see that very much anymore, though, right?
Yeah.
And that's not common. That's just elite. Like, that's just sports. Like, no, I want you so exhausted. Like, go find out. Like, I would love to see, like, I'm going to play the opening 7 minutes. Like, we're easing into games and down 15. So I'd like to see the guys decide, okay, I'm going to go so hard here. That 5 minutes into this thing, I got to turn to Will and he's got to bail me out and get me out of here. And then I'm going to find out the next night if I do that can I do that for 6 minutes? And then maybe I can do that for 8 minutes. And it's super hard. It's not maybe a reasonable thing to ask. But that's what I would like to see out of some of our guys right now is that level of kind of what's the, you know, it's not.
Effort, maybe.
Experiment.
I don't know.
Experimenting, maybe. Like, just come out like a shot out of get into the game and come out like a shot out of can, like your shot out of a can. Like, And the fact of the matter, here's what's crazy about this request. What's hard about this is none of these guys have ever had to do that. You know why? Because they were the best player on the floor in every game they've ever played, or the second best player in every game they ever played until this September.
Yeah. That's a great point. And, I would love to see that too.
Yeah, and that, like, you just, and it's not our guys. Like, you just don't see that a tremendous amount.
Yeah, I mean, off the top of your head, how many guys in the league right now play like that?
Yeah, like Russell Westbrook, like, to his credit, like, I think he's, like, the most inefficient player, and he destroys you offensively. But, like, he plays so hard still, you've got to match it.
Yep.
Like, so, yeah, there are guys, like, Chris Dunn, I think, Colin Sexton, I think those guys both play pretty darn hard every night. You know, I think Simone Fontecchio used to, like, when we went, you know, some of those guys, coaches on the other team would talk about how hard guys were playing. That we went to play, you know, we had play hard guys. And he's playing, they're playing a bunch of coaches. So, yeah, well, we'll start playing our guys that play harder and tough. Like, that's the only area at this point in your career that you actually can control, which would be that you play as hard or harder than your teammate. But, like, there's too many – I don't know. I don't want to get into it. There's a little bit – I'm seeing too many things where it's like, oh, I'll take the easy route. Like, oh, we're in transition, and my guy's outside the three-point line, so I'm going to stop at the free-throw line because then I'm near my guy while the play on the right side is isolated on the wing, and now my teammate is just left on an island. Well, okay, you actually need to run back four more steps so that you can help on that, and then you're going to have to bust your ass back out to the open three-point shooter in transition. That's what's going to actually have to happen. Now, let me give these guys a moment of defense, because Will Hardy before the Atlanta game – sorry, I'm babbling here – but Will Hardy before the Atlanta game had an awesome point.
Mm-hmm.
And that was that when you're young and you're in this league, you're trying to survive. And when you're trying to survive, you don't have the brain power to be worrying about your teammates because you're just trying to survive. And our guys are just trying to survive right now. And so, you know, for me to ask somebody to run back and be thinking about how it impacts, that's probably a second, third year player type thing. And so this is probably not the most fair request. I think what you're seeing is a really natural thing of young players. I don't think any of this is an indictment of Keyonte George, Taylor Hendricks, Walker Kessler, Bryce Sensabaugh. I think this is a reality of what happens with young players in the NBA. And, you know, brilliant, unbelievably gifted young players who've always been the best player on their teams who the world's revolved around.
How fascinating is this Western Conference race? I'm looking at the standings. And the Suns, Lakers, and Warriors are 8-9-10. The West is that good?
Have you looked at, like, so it's not as crazy now because Dallas got out of it.
Yeah.
So, but the play-in has Steph Curry, Draymond Green, Klay Thompson, LeBron James, Anthony Davis, Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, and Domantas Sabonis. Right now?
It's insane. Two of those teams are going home.
Yeah.
Two of those teams are not going to be in the playoffs.
Right. Yeah, and it's catastrophic for Sacramento if they don't make the playoffs, by the way.
Yeah.
Has impact on their draft position and all sorts of other stuff. And it's catastrophic for Phoenix, too, if they don't make the playoffs with that roster. Phoenix doesn't play hard, by the way. Like, not just young kids. Phoenix's problem is Phoenix doesn't play hard and they don't pass. Like, I've watched them a lot recently. They just don't play hard.
Do they think they're just going to be able
to talk about?
Are they just going to flip a switch? What are they doing?
I don't know. Like, maybe, but they also, like, I remember, how much can I tell this story?
We want you to tell the whole thing.
Tell it all.
Do it.
I mean, I'll tell it, I guess. So, we got Bojan Bogdanović. That offseason, we added Bojan Bogdanović. We had, like, three really good players, right? We added Mike Conley, Bojan Bogdanović, and somebody else. instead of Ricky Rubio, Jay Crowder, we got way better. And I went to coffee with Quinn, and Quinn's like, what are your thoughts? And I was like, oh, you have to get in the play hard. And he goes, what do you mean? I go, well, the guys you had on your roster before, if they didn't play hard, they went home. Like, if Ricky Rubio didn't play hard, he shot 36% from the field. He didn't play hard, he went home. If Jay Crowder didn't play hard, he went home. And home sucks. Because home, you don't get paid.
Yeah,
it's true.
And you don't get 19,000 people cheering for you. So, Bojan Bogdanovic, Mike Conley, those guys were so dang good. They didn't have to play hard. So, Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, Bradley Beal might just be so dang good they don't have to play hard. But it impacts whether your teammates play hard. So, that's, like, this is, you know, play hard and pass. Will Hardy says it all the time. It's actually really true. Play hard and pass.
Yeah.
And Phoenix doesn't play hard and they don't pass. It'll be interesting to see if they suddenly start playing hard when they're, like, in a do-or-die, one-game-or-out situation. Will be really, really interesting to see.
David, I know you're busy calling games, but do you go home and watch other games or at least the highlights of other games? If so, that Nuggets, Spurs, that Wembanyama, Jokic matchup, that was pretty entertaining.
So I usually, and I haven't got to it yet today, so what I actually do is I have been trying to watch the final 5 minutes of every close game. It's actually final 9 minutes of every close game all season. So I go home. And if the game was close, I'll go back and rewatch the final 9 minutes. It's really good for play-by-play prep because you see all 10 players that are playing by doing 9 minutes. And then you also know what their go-to sets are late in games and what they're trying to get done. But I have not gotten to that one yet.
That was a pretty good matchup between the MVP and Wembanyama. I mean, that was fun to watch. Wembanyama stuffed Jokic at the rim a couple times. Jokic got him once with a dunk. It was fun to see where the MVP's at and where the potential future superstar is headed.
Like, there's a chance. I don't want to get too out of control here. But, like, Victor's averaging, what, 23, like, and, like, 3-4 blocks and, like, 2 or 3 assists and, like, maybe 10 rebounds without knowing what he's doing, right? And playing 28 minutes a night, and he has no... Like, there's a chance this kid's going to average 30 points, 15 rebounds, and 5 block shots a game for a season.
Yeah, I would believe it.
Like, it's crazy what he might be able to do.
This league's good. It's going to continue to be good. It's fun to watch it all play out, and it's going to be fun to watch the Jazz and Clippers on Friday night. These young guys get a shot at one of the best teams in the league. We look forward to hearing you on the call, David. Appreciate it. Always a pleasure. Look forward to this each and every week. We appreciate you taking the time to come on. Thanks so much. Enjoy L.A. on Friday.
Okay, thanks, guys. Pleasure. Hope my point on that came across right. I was not banging on Taylor Price.
I think
it's just hard.
I think I think it's great for you to give us that insight.
Yeah,
these guys are rookies. They're trying to learn. And I think it's important for fans to understand from your viewpoint what you're seeing on the floor. I think you nailed it. I appreciate the insight you shared on that.
Can I give one thought this week where I thought was super interesting? Sorry, I know
we're
late. Please,
go ahead. Go for
it. Will Hardy talked about Bryce Sensabaugh and how they're working on his footwork. So Bryce Sensabaugh is going to the gym in the morning or on practice day, and he's working on his footwork, and then he's expected to go out in front of 18,000 people against the best athletes in the world and try it. That's crazy.
Part of the process, I guess, right? Developing these young talents.
Yeah. But that's hard.
Yeah.
That's why we need to have leeway with some of these guys.
Absolutely. Best league in the world. Yeah, you got to do that. All right, Locke, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
See ya.
That's the voice of the Jazz, David Locke. Each and every week here on JJ and Alex, it's good to get that perspective.
Yeah,
and you got to understand, like, this process. Even as good as of these rookies are, as he's going through and sharing that, there's so many things they have to do to get better. Even as talented as they are, and he's right, we do have to have patience. And I think that those in the organization want them to be better as much as anybody else does, and they have to have patience. The players themselves have to have patience, because if they try to force things or try to get out of themselves, they develop bad habits. And you mentioned some of those things when you're in a situation where you're losing, or where, you know, things are where they are, where you're playing 82 games in a year, you can develop bad habits. And right now, I think that's the biggest key for these guys, is to not let that happen, not to let that creep in. And they're going to have moments where they do. They're young players, and they're human beings. And I think that he did shed some great insight on that, and how they have to do. There's certain things and that they can do and have to do, but we also need to understand where they're at. And when we make judgments based on how they're performing, we need to keep that in mind.
Yeah. It's that dreaded P word again, patience.
I thought you were going to say pain, which is, I think, what we're feeling as well, too. There's 100%. Patience, there's pain, but then you look at this box score, and, you know, that's what we have to judge, and you're seeing 22 points from a rookie, 18 points from another rookie, and you're like, okay, there's progress here. So a lot of positive there, despite the 10-game losing streak. All right, we got to take a break. When we come back, it's the NFL Blitz. A lot of stuff going on. Obviously, we hit the trade earlier in the day. We'll touch on that briefly, but there's a lot more going on as well. The NFL never sleeps. Next on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
And now, a look at traffic from the KSL Traffic Center.
We've got a few accidents to really bog down the rush hour right now, including a fresh